Brittle Diamonds, Chapter 37, The Dark Valley, Ascension Sunday. Today the Church was celebrating the descent of the Holy Spirit on the Apostles after Christ's ascension into heaven, and Father Peter bitterly regretted not being able to say Mass at St. John's. He was feeling much weaker today. Josie's commentary on her conversation with Tracy 6 days ago had been difficult to listen to in silence, and the issues which arose between the two women bothered him. He worried about his sister's future, about Tracy, and what would happen to the babies. All through the week, he had been asking God to give him the wisdom to advise the two mothers. He'd grabbed sheets of paper and scribbled down various scenarios, trying to sift through them and decide the best course for the unhappy ladies to take. The process took an age. The cancer so debilitated him. Every effort cost precious energy, and writing by hand, which he'd formerly taken for granted, was now a long, drawn-out affair. He didn't want to dictate to Matt, although it would have been so much easier. He could also have asked his friend for advice on what to say in these letters to Josie and Tracy. But an inner voice told him this was his duty alone. By making the right decision, maybe he would be atoning to God for what had transpired between the two. And Matt kept his distance during these letter-writing sessions. Although Father Peter could see, he found the pastor's painful progress difficult to watch. During his stay with the Goldworth family, the resigned priest had been careful not to push them into going to Mass. Bishop Mullard would be disappointed in him. But a nightly ritual had developed in the household. It began, strangely, with Neil. The recalcitrant teenager felt overwhelmed with Catholic influences at school and resented having a sick priest come and live with them. He never said as much to Father Peter, but gave the wheelchair a wide berth to make it clear he didn't want any involvement with the man. Yet all four sat together during meals, and despite himself, the boy gradually became interested in the topics being discussed. Over time, Neil appeared to regard himself as being in a cool situation. How many conservative Catholic families had a real-life sex abuser come and stay? And not only that, but the man had cancer and his sister was having babies with another woman. Father Peter could read the boy's mind. Here was Neil's opportunity to be somebody at school, impress his friends, and shock his teachers out of their religious complacence. Neil began to sit with the priest and pose questions, casually at first, as if he weren't really interested. Then slowly his tone changed. His inquiries moved from the general, "Is there really a hell for all who go against Catholic teaching?" to the more specific, "Is it difficult for you to believe in God after everything that's happened to you?" Father Peter smiled, like father, like son. And so they debated, with Neil opening up and exploring those things which bothered him in his religion. Father Peter brought Matt into these discussions, which became lively. It was only a short while before Rosa too entered the arena. The family would sit for hours, especially after dinner, pounding the priest with questions, challenging Catholic doctrine, and slowly beginning to understand Father Peter's point of view. The bridge playing often dissolved into religious debate too. The participants only went to bed when they realized how much they had exhausted the patient. But Father Peter enjoyed their sessions. They tired him physically, but revitalized his soul. He knew he was making headway. The night before Neil went back to Ampleforth, he came to Father Peter. "Father, I won't see you again, will I?" he said. His face looked red. The thought had caused private tears. "Not in this world, Neil, no. But can I give you a final blessing before you leave for school? Would that be too Catholic for you?" Neil smiled. "No, Father, it'd be great if you would." His parents discovered Father Peter blessing Neil. Matt cried, "Gross favoritism! How about us, too?" And so began a nightly ritual. Neil left for school the next day, but the Goldworth parents continued to kneel every evening in front of the wheelchair for their blessing. On Saturday, Father Peter asked Matt if he would fetch the new parish priest of St. John's. Matt looked quizzically at his waning friend. "Why do you want to see Father Paul? Won't he be rubbing salt in the wound?" The priest smiled. Not at all. Father Joe Caceres is a wonderful man and just the right person to take over from me. Matt, I need the sacrament of extreme unction. Matt took a step back. You're surely not that close, Father. Isn't it a bit early? No, my pagan friend, it is not. And if I wait till tomorrow, it's Sunday, and Father Paul won't have time to see me. I don't want to leave this any later. Father! Matt almost shouted the words. Is there something you're not telling me? What I'm telling you is that I would like the sacrament of extreme unction. Father Peter smiled up at his male nurse. Would you mind fetching Father Paul from the priest's residence? He could see Matt struggle between leaving immediately and worrying that his charge might die if he did go. Matt, I promise not to die while you're away. Matt grabbed the man's hand and said, You better not. It's a sin to lie, you know, and left the room. Father Peter heard him call out to Rosa to keep an eye on Father, as if by doing so she could stave off the inevitable. He shook his head. When the young, good-looking and charismatic priest had performed the last rites over Father Peter and left, the latter told Matt and Rosa how lucky the priest was that such a good man was available to take over from him. Matt snorted and said, Just as well, since you've given up on your flock. Poor Matt, still think I should fight the good fight, eh? Not any more. You don't have the health for it. I only wish I could have done it for you, though. Matt, you unbeliever, have faith. All will be well. You wait and see. You sound just like a friend of my father's. He was South African and used to say Alles sal recht kommen all the time. What does that mean? All will be well in the end. Your father's friend was a wise man. Listen to him, even if you won't heed my words. Such had been the events of yesterday. It was now around 10 o'clock in the morning. The three of them were in the conservatory, he and Matt reading the newspapers, and Rosa was puzzling over the Sunday Times crossword. Both dogs were stretched out lazily on the rug, with Cerberus's front paw resting on Hilly's neck. It was the end of May, and even the weather was in a good mood. Father Peter looked over the rim of his reading glasses at Matt and Rosa. He folded his part of the newspaper and cleared his throat noisily. Matt, who was intensely attuned to the invalid, raised his eyes. Yes, he asked. You rang? As a matter of fact, I did. What does Sir require? Well, actually... This is not beginning well, Matt interrupted. You're going to make me do something. Something for your own good, Father Peter said in a mock petulant tone. Sounds serious, Rosa added. And probably painful, too. Matt laughed. So, what is it? I want you to go to the 11 o'clock Mass and check out that new priest you met yesterday. Let me know if he gives good sermons, and whether my erstwhile congregation is still attending in large enough numbers. In other words, you have things to do today and want your privacy. That's one way of putting it, Father Peter grinned. But it wouldn't hurt you to get back into the habit of church going, you know. It won't be the same without you there, Rosa told him. Consider it a spying mission, to add a bit of excitement. Well, it's nice not to be wanted, I must say, Matt said, getting up. I'll have to go and put on some decent clothes. You're a manipulative old man, you realise that, don't you? There has to be some compensation for my advanced age, Matt, he winked at Rosa. It's a good thing your wife always looks decent. She can finish her crossword before she goes. Only if you help me, she replied. It was 10:35. Matt and Rosa had left for St. John's. With painful effort, Father Peter wheeled his way to the cabinet beside his bed in the downstairs room that had been converted from a second sitting room for his benefit. He took a dose of morphine before removing a large brown envelope and three white business envelopes from the bedside table, which he placed on his lap. Wrapping a wool blanket close around his legs, he carefully balanced his cash on his knees as he inched his wheelchair outside, followed by the dogs who were pleased to go out again and play tag. Wheezing with exhaustion, brought on by the effort of rolling the large wheels, he reached his favourite spot overlooking the front fields, where now two horses grazed peacefully. Catherine and Rosa had become good friends, and Matt, with a little encouragement from Father Peter, had given in and bought his wife her long-awaited horse. The priest had watched Rosa blossom with the fun and exercise of owning her treasured gypsy, and he enjoyed the sight of the mare and gelding chasing each other around the pasture on windy days, or just because they felt like it. Matt had come a long way from the surly man at Paddington Station. He'd settled temporarily into the life of a country squire while seeking another job still. The talk around the kitchen table was about making the Grove earn some money in the interim, and Rosa planted the seed of an idea with Matt that they should have people board their horses with them. It would use the empty stables, and there was plenty of acreage for more equines. At first, her husband balked at the idea of strangers coming and going on the property, but Rosa reminded him how lucky they'd been with Catherine, and that they could start by finding tenants who also had horses for the other two cottages. It would be double income and use their assets profitably. Matt looked at Father Peter and said, "Have you two been discussing this behind my back?" "Absolutely not," the priest exclaimed. "This is the first I've heard about it." "It's a good idea, Rose. It would mean a regular income and give me more time to find the right job." Rosa nodded, and Father Peter smiled broadly. The spouses were becoming a team. After Neil's departure for Ampleforth, the two men had a frank discussion about the boy. Matt phoned his son to ask if he would like to stop boarding and attend the local Catholic school, which had a good reputation. Neil's answer was a resounding affirmative. Rosa was elated. It gave the Goldworths a second chance at proper family life before Neil grew up and left home for good. Father Peter could not help once again indulging his satisfaction at having witnessed, and perhaps influenced, these positive developments. He placed his hands over the envelopes on his knees and admired the view. Touching his face, the sun warmed him, while inside his body, the morphine smoothed the edges of his constant pain. According to the doctor, he had 2 more weeks. "I must remember to ask about being buried in St. John's Cemetery. Surely the bishop won't object." He remained there a long time. His eyes drooped and his thoughts drifted back to Matt. "I hope he finds what he needs. Dear Lord, thank you for such a friend. Though I walk in the dark valley of death, nothing shall I fear, for you are close beside me. Your rod and your staff protect and comfort me." A few minutes later, Cerberus bounced up to his master, but no hand stretched out to pat him. The huge black dog sat on his haunches and gave a long howl.